This is the problem with the Senate. All right. Okay. The Human Services Committee of the Senate in Early Childhood will come to order. Welcome, everybody. We have, sorry for the delays, as often happens towards the end of a session, we have some bills that aren't ready to go, some bills that have sponsors that want to come and talk to them, but our committee will likely be over by the time people can get here. So we are going to carry over House Bill 2889A work session and House Bill 2890A work session to next Tuesday. That is the declaw and debark hearing day, so we're going to do that first right at the top of the hour before we get into the cats and dogs and iguanas and rabbits and other furry and not so furry creatures. So 2889 is carried over, 2890 is carried over, and I'm going to... Are you both okay if I open up a work session with just the three of us on House Bill 2394?
Sure.
All right. I'm opening up a work session on House Bill 2394A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, 2394A was heard on the 12th and then carried over on the 19th. It requires the state lottery to inform the Department of Human Services within 7 days of paying lottery prizes of $12.50 or more. Declares emergency as effective on passage. There is no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal, and no subsequent referral.
Great. Thank you very much. Vice Chair Olson.
Well, I want to ask a question, Madam
Okay.
Chair. We got a letter from Representative Olson.
Yes.
And number three, it says DHS will comply with state and federal data privacy and security requirements. It is anticipated that DHS will likely run a monthly data match of lottery prize winners. This is an automated process, meaning the computer system will identify a match and alert staff of the match. After the data match is complete, DHS will destroy all data. I support that as long as that goes into rules.
All right. So are you... I don't control the rules.
But I know.
So you're putting on the record that it is your expectation and understanding.
That's right. That's why I would support this bill, because this is the appropriate way to check. It's wonderful. They would look to see who the winners are, and then they'll destroy all the information of all that stuff. And normal people that don't win anything won't have their name out in public. So I support this wholeheartedly, but I want it on the record that this is the way the system should work. And if Representative Olson said that, I believe that would qualify for me. And if it doesn't work that way, we'll bring it up later.
Okay, very good. Anything further?
No.
All right. Would you like to make a motion?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2394A be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves House Bill 2394A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Cruz and Senator Dembrough are excused.
I'll carry.
And Senator Olson will carry that bill. I don't mind. That way you can put your concerns and expectations on the record.
That's what I want to do.
All right. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2394. Colleagues, House Bill 3222, which is our land use bill, are you comfortable with opening that work session and voting for it?
Sure.
Okay. Then I will open up. Oh, but I didn't wait for you to say yes.
Yes.
Yes, okay. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3222A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3222A was heard on the 19th. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, and the -A6 amendments are before the committee. This is the one that requires LCDC to order local governments, state agencies, or special districts to take actions necessary to bring comprehensive plan, land use regulation, limited land use decisions, or other land use decisions into compliance if its standards, conditions, and procedures are subjective or discourage needed housing through unreasonable cost or delay. The -A6 amendment requires the local government's approvals that are necessary to develop needed housing if applications are consistent with the comprehensive plan and the applicable regulations. It also requires local governments to allow amendment of applications that are not consistent with the comprehensive plan or applicable regulations, and requires local government denial of applications that are not capable of being made consistent via amendment or conditions. As we discussed at the last hearing, the A5 and A6 are the same. The A6 is cleaner. It's reordered and reworded. It's a more refined version of the A5.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the -A6 amendments dated 5/18/2015.
Chair Olson moves to adopt the -A6 amendments dated 5/18/2015. Is there any discussion? I just wanted to put on the record, I had some concerns about this because I heard some hesitancy from the representatives of the city that were here, but the city did not, the LOC did not say that they were opposed. I held it over. Nobody has come to me to say that they are opposed or to raise any concerns with these. So based on that and that that invitation was open, that is why I'm supporting the Dash 6 amendments. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Helser, I move House Bill 3222A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves House Bill 3222A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered, and please note that Senators Dembrough and Cruz are excused. I will close the work session on House Bill 3222A.
Carol.
What?
I was suggesting, Madam Chair, pick someone who's not
here. Pick someone who's not here. I have never carried a land use bill. I will carry this bill. So mark me down. All right, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3323A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3323A allows Type B area agencies in service areas with a population of 650,000 or more to bring civil action for physical or financial abuse of vulnerable persons. Declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal, no subsequent referral, and it's previously heard on May 19th.
Great. And so we had asked the proponents of this bill to come back today, but now I'm noticing that I don't see Chris. Is there anybody here to talk about this bill and why we should move it forward? In case someone is watching on TV?
Mr. Vick?
Do people still want this bill? Okay, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3323A. And I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3391A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3391A has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means and comes off of the House floor 45-3 and out of House committee unanimously. It directs the Attorney General to file suit in circuit court on behalf of employees of the Department of Human Services in certain internally substantiated cases. It creates a task force on safety for child welfare employees staffed by DHS, outlines the membership objectives and the processes relevant to the task force, requires a report to the legislature by September 15th, 2016, declares emergency effective on passage.
Thank you very much. So Rhonda Morgan, Janelle, and Cheryl Hemstra, please. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Gelser and members of the committee, my name is Rhonda Morgan, and I work for the Department of Human Services in the Self-Sufficiency Program.
Can you pull the mic over a little closer so we can get you on the record and everyone can hear?
Is that better?
A little closer, and maybe speak up just a little bit.
I'm not often told that. So is that better?
That's much better. Okay. Thank you.
And your name again? I didn't
get it. My name is Rhonda Morgan, and I work for the Department of Human Services in the Self-Sufficiency Program. I'm a case manager in Gold Beach. I'm also the president of the statewide president of the sublocal in SEIU 503 that represents workers in DHS and OHA. And I'm here in support of House Bill 3391, which would remove barriers to allow the Department of Human Services to obtain stalking or protective orders on behalf of workers who face this kind of threat as a result of the work that we do. We worked closely with DHS and the Attorney General's office to get this bill right. And we'd like to thank Representative Paul Evans for bringing this legislation forward. Over the past several years, the agency has seen an increase in both the number and the severity of the threats made against state workers. Whatever the root cause of that or the contributing factors, the reality is very personal, and it's faced on a daily basis by these workers. People who serve some of the most vulnerable folks in our state. The focus of this bill is our staff at Child Welfare. These are workers that are tasked with keeping children safe and, if necessary, removing them from harmful home environments. They go into unsafe, emotionally charged situations, often without backup, to respond to reports of children in danger. And they need to know that the agency is able to assist them and support them should they need it as a result of the work that they do. And while we felt that the need was most pressing for our child welfare staff, we've also heard from staff in other departments who have faced similar threats, including a vocational rehabilitation counselor whose client became obsessed with her and started following her around both on and off the job because she was the only one he felt he could communicate with. To that end, this bill also contains a task force component, which would look at the potential benefits of expanding this policy to other departments within DHS. Currently, if a worker is threatened with stalking or harassment as a result of the duties they perform, the agency is able to and does take some steps to protect their workers, but there are limits to what they can do, and in some rare and extreme cases, it just isn't enough. Currently, the worker has to navigate the judicial system on their own, using their own time and personal resources to obtain legal assistance to protect themselves and their families. This bill would allow the agency to work through the Attorney General's office to obtain protective orders on behalf of the employee. So what we envision is that after all the other steps and safety procedures have been exhausted, the individual employee would work through the agency management team and have DHS request the Attorney General to take action on their behalf. I want to share with you the example of one of the extreme cases that I mentioned earlier. This is a story of Twyla, and she's a child welfare worker at DHS. She lives in a small community near Eugene, and she's had to spend the last 4 years living in fear because of the harassment and stalking by a client. Through the course of her work, Twyla removed a child from an unsafe home environment in 2011. Almost immediately, this person started making threats, including very detailed personal information. Twyla received a phone call from a person purporting to be this parent's roommate who told her what her home address was, what her house looked like, and explained to her how this parent had developed very detailed plans on how to set the house on fire and shoot her and her daughter as they tried to escape. This parent went so far as to sit outside Twyla's home on one occasion. Due to the limitations on DHS, Twyla had to navigate the court system on her own with no support in order to get a stalking order. She had to pay out of pocket for the attorney fees and had to do all the work on her own time. She was in a terrifying situation, all due to the work that she does. It only makes sense that workers like Twyla get the support of her employer when faced with a situation like this. I appreciate the opportunity to testify with you guys today, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions that I can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, Committee Chair Gelster and committee members. My name is Janelle. I have been employed with the Social Services as a Social Services Specialist.
And Janelle, can you say your last name as well?
Yes, Janelle Tefteller.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've been employed as a Social Services Specialist with the Medford Child Welfare since December 2008 and a member of the SEIU Local Union 503. I support House Bill 3391, designed to protect child welfare workers outside of their workplace from repeated alarming contacts by their clients. Every day, child welfare workers put their lives on the line to protect the lives of children. We are committed to this mission. In order to do this important work, we are asking for the same type of protection that we give our clients. My story is not the only story, but it serves to illustrate a gap in safety for our staff. In June 2011, I was assigned as a caseworker to a client who I will refer to as Mr. F. His daughter was removed from his home and placed with her mother. He lost his job, his housing, and his car. Right away, he began to blame me for his circumstances. He began to make comments to me which became disturbing and alarming. At one point, he said he was going to chop me into little pieces. Another time, he became agitated in our office lobby and started yelling at me. threatening to tear down posters and baiting me to stop him. In September 2011, he told a nurse that he was going to find where I lived and kill me and my children so that I would know how he felt. I did not have children, but I lived alone and knew how easy it could be to find someone's address online. For other reasons, his case was transferred to another worker. Still, he continued to leave threatening voicemails to his new caseworkers, mentioning my name in at least 10 messages. Given his continuous harassment and threats to me and other staff, the department issued a trespass order 2 years later so that he could no longer come onto state property. After a court appearance in August 2013, a judge dropped the no trespass order when he promised to follow through with mental health treatment. He did not follow through. By February of 2014, he had resumed leaving threatening voicemails at the office. Finally, on a Saturday in April 2014, when I was in the Medford Library, he came up behind me and whispered in a menacing tone, Janelle, I know what you did. He later admitted to the police officer that he said, I would pay for what I did. Even though I had not been involved with his case for at least 2.5 years, he continued to blame me for all the consequences of his actions and his poor life choices. I had become an obsession to him. His threats no longer came from a distance, and I feared for my safety. My manager advised me to call the Medford police. Upon police recommendation, I had to make the effort to take out a stalking order and navigate the court system all by myself. I had to subpoena witnesses and evidence and then prove this case without assistance of legal counsel, all while dealing with the emotional trauma that had been inflicted upon me. The department did not have the authority to help me, and on August 18, 2014, a stalking order was granted. For over 3 years, I dealt with the chronic stress and anxiety related to this dangerous individual. I limited the places that I shopped, socialized, and recreated. Even with a stalking order in place, I and my coworkers frequently saw him in close proximity to my workplace. Given my continuing fears, I requested and was granted a transfer to another child welfare office in a district 5 hours away. I just started my job there a few months ago. While I have received some support from DHS, the department could not take further measures to protect me or my coworkers outside of work. If DHS had been able to, I'm sure that it would have extended more assistance to me. I decided to testify today so that no one else would need to go through what I went through. No one else should have to feel as alone as I felt. Please allow it the ability to seek further remedies through the Department of Justice. Thank you.
Chair Gelsa, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm an Assistant Attorney General at the Oregon Department of Justice. And as you've heard, this is a very serious problem. Very dangerous people are involved. And we support House Bill 3391. The issue with the current law is basically the Attorney General is limited to enforcing the laws explicitly granted to the Attorney General, and right now those aren't in statute. House Bill 3391 would grant that authority so we can step in and help with legal resources on the ground for these cases when the legal resources are needed to obtain a stalking order for these cases. So just wanted to be on the record in support of the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel?
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for your stories. I'm a public health nurse, so I would go into the homes, too, and I can relate very much to what you do. And I was involved also in having some children removed, and it's very scary, especially when I knew that there was drug use in the families. And a couple of times I would actually call the city of Portland's police. They were always very willing to accompany me to the homes just in case, you know, something would happen, but never had the situation like you of actually being stalked. But I definitely support this bill. So thank you very much for testifying.
I have a comment.
Yes.
If you don't mind. Shame on DHS. That is a hostile work environment that they subjected you to, and they wouldn't support you. Shame on them. I support this bill wholeheartedly, but I feel really bad for you folks that your own people would not get behind you and support actions against this kind of riffraff that come after you. And you know, if this is for my business, if I did that to my employees, they would make a claim against me and people would be all over me. And I'm it's appalling that DHS has allowed this to happen for as many years as it's gone on, to put you in that type of work environment. It's shameful. And if this is what it takes to fix it, let's get it done.
So I had a question. So we heard a similar bill, not a similar bill, but around similar subject matter in the Judiciary Committee earlier this session that had to do with keeping private information. Is this is a different bill, but allows for the stalking order. The other part was maybe a companion piece to be able to keep your identity concealed.
The two will actually work in conjunction with each other. DHS has been fabulous in working with us on around issues of safety, and
doesn't sound like it.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of this has to do with the kind of work that we do, just by the very nature of the work that we do.
And I know DHS, Senator Olson was very supportive in the Judiciary Committee, and I think has been very supportive in developing these concepts so
Absolutely.
That they legally have the tools to be able to to respond. I think the problem is without the legislation, they don't have the authority to kind of expedite and get this type of help to them. And actually, DHS is here to support the bill and is signed up to come up next.
Which is fine, but for how many years does this go on? I mean, this is ridiculous. If you let employees suffer through the anxiety and the angst that you've had to go through, they had to move 5 hours away, and where's your employer? What are they doing? That to me is just unbelievable.
Well, we have DHS here, so
we'll do that
next, but let's be a little friendly to them. Any further questions for this panel? All right. Thank you all very much, and thank you for the work that you do to keep kids and families safe. It does put you all in places where your own safety and that of your family is often compromised, and I just can't imagine the difficulty of that work, and I'm glad you're willing to go out there and do it every day.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. Jerry, come on up.
I like the way you dress.
Chair Gelser and the rest of the committee, my name is Jerry Weybrandt. I'm the Chief Operations Officer for Child Welfare and Self-Sufficiency for the Department of Human Services. I'm here to testify in support of this bill. Imagine my surprise when Janelle's story came to me and I approached DOJ asking if we could actually hire them to help her with stalking order. They did some legal research and were able to determine that we were unable to do that. It didn't take long for us to have a conversation with SEIU and DOJ to say, how do we solve or fix this problem? It's fairly unique or rare that it's happened, apparently. I've tried to get a sense of the numbers, and you heard two stories, and as far as I can tell right now, there's three out there that we're looking at, but three is three too many. This is one of those opportunities to do what's right for our employees who do serve Oregon's most vulnerable population and often find themselves the target of folks who are unhappy or have issues that lead them to be potentially violent. We hope that you can support this bill and allow us to protect our employees and further support them in the work that they're doing. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
A comment. It's a great bill. I'm glad you're supporting it, but you should have been there years ago. This is not the only two that have ever happened, for certain.
I guess the place where I'm, and you know, Senator Olson and I lived in the same teeny tiny town in Indiana in the late 1970s, and we just figured it out the other day. So despite that, I disagree with you, because my understanding is that if you're an agency and you want to protect your employees and you want to provide this assistance, but the law precludes you from doing so, your hands are tied and you can't, and then you have to come to the legislature and ask for a bill to get it done.
And you and I agree on that, but the fact is that there's probably been many of these cases, and I want to know why you didn't do this long ago to protect your employees.
Chair Gelser and the rest of the committee, thank you for your question. And I actually perceive your questioning and your comments as a level of support for this bill and doing what's right for employees. This is the first time this issue ever came to me in my current title, and as soon as it came to me, we moved to try to address it.
Well, thank you. But could you possibly, and don't take this the wrong way, it just there's so many instances where employees are abused and they're able to take action, and it just surprises me that a state agency cannot protect their employees. But could you maybe research back 5 or 10 years and see, because certainly this isn't the only time people have been upset with people coming in taking away their children and have stalked. Is there any way that you can look back and just say, you know, we've had this before and this is the way we did it?
Chair Gelser and the rest of the committee, I can attempt to do that. Let me be clear that it'll be very difficult because we, of course, wouldn't know that an employee has obtained a stalking order. But I can certainly ask the folks in the building if they've heard about this before. It was, like I said, it was a surprise to me that there had been no resolution of this. In fact, if this had come up before.
So
the young lady, I mean, yours was for several years. And you, the office certainly knew about it.
Chair Gelser and the rest of the committee, the day I knew about it, I contacted DOJ.
And don't take my outrage wrong. This is a follow-up. Don't take my outrage wrong. I just feel sorry that these people have been subjected to this, and an employer hasn't done anything about it until now. That's the thing that upsets me. And I'm glad we're doing it, because I'll support this whole lot. We'll move it today if we can.
Right, and we will move it today, and I think I agree with Mr. Weybrand. I'm like you. I very much support the bill. I think it's also true that Mr. Weybrand learned about this and immediately took action. And it's very hard to go back into the past, and we don't know what those situations were. But what I know of Mr. Weybrand since he's been working here is, you know, working at DHS, and we've had some hard conversations. You have to work with the hardest, most difficult things. You don't get to work with people when they're at their best, whether those are parents that you're working with or legislators whose offices that you are sitting inside, because you are dealing with the most personal and emotional of issues that are there. And what I have appreciated about you, and I think it's reflected in his learning this and immediately bringing the bill, is the transparency that you bring and the very obvious open commitment that you and all the people that work with and for you bring to protecting kids and the people that protect them, who are your employees. So I'm sorry that you had to wait to get this help, but I'm glad that you've been willing to share the story in a very public way, which can be very difficult. I'm really glad that you saw this issue, and as you have on so many issues, immediately sought action on it, and that the combination of those factors is going to provide better protection. And I wonder, wait, let me finish for a second.
Go ahead.
And I wonder if something that we might consider doing moving forward in the interim would be to have an interim hearing on safety issues related to child welfare workers and what initiatives are taking place within the department to keep workers that are going into very vulnerable places in the community safe. And that might get to some of your answers. We could get to some of that historically. What have we learned? Are there things that the legislature might identify through that conversation that can get us further ahead of changes that might need to be
made? Well, two points. I don't know at what point you came into your position, but certainly there's, and your office is about the state, there's people that have been there for years. Some of them are probably lead those offices, and it would just be, hey, Jim, did you ever have any cases in the past that someone was stalked and concerned you? That would be a simple question. But the other thing is, do your employees, if they feel that it is going to be a tenuous situation, have the ability, as Senator Mona Sanderson said, to call the police to escort them in with it? Do they have that ability?
Chair Gelser and the rest of the members of the committee, Senator Olson. Yes, they do. And in fact, in a very large percentage of the cases, especially if there's any criminal charges that might be pending, there's an attempt at vertical investigation. So law enforcement accompanies the worker to that, especially in the initial investigation. That becomes more difficult in ongoing cases where there's not criminal charges filed. And those occasions, oftentimes, we go with two workers in order to try to provide protection for that employee that comes. There's a series of trainings we try to provide to assist them about how to keep themselves safe. And there's other steps that were implied in this testimony that we try to take, because it is very difficult work. And oftentimes, folks can become very emotionally charged because we're involved.
Now, don't take this the wrong
follow-up.
Don't take this the wrong way. Are your employees, and I know what the answer is going to be, are your employees allowed to carry mace or any protective device?
Senator Gelser, rest of the committee, they are not.
Okay, thank you.
No more follow-ups.
No more follow-ups? All right.
Chair?
Senator Montesanderson?
I think it's an excellent idea to have, just for education of the committee, of the types of things, of how we are trained. Because it's, as public health nurses, we were trained. You go in, you always sit between the patient and the door. I mean, there's just a lot of different things, pages of how you should act when you go into an unsafe situation. In fact, one time when we had to go pick up a child, there were three policemen, two going in the back, one in the front. My job was just to go in, grab the baby, and get out. When you care as much about children and the safety of children, I mean, that's the key. I mean, we are trying to protect children, and we do put ourselves in harm's way sometimes, but we're also trained on how to act when we're in harm's way also.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you so much. And thanks to everybody that worked to bring this bill. Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on House Bill 3391? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3391A and open up a work session on House Bill 3391A.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3391A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Oh, but no. Why? I have a, but a it already came has, from the
fiscal statement has issued. I assume they want to take a closer look.
But there wasn't a fiscal statement on the House side?
Yes, yes, Madam Chair, a fiscal statement has issued on this, on the A and gross measure.
Yeah, fiscal.
Got one right here.
Okay, so I guess we need to.
So what are we going to do?
The motion would be restated with the.
Right, no, I under. Just, I need a second. Do we have the fiscal statement here? Yes. I'm just wondering if. Because it already came across the House floor.
Probably needs to go to Ways and Means because it's got a task force attached to it.
It's above 50,000, which is the magic number.
All right. I guess it has to go to Ways and Means. All right. Would you please?
I will withdraw my motion.
Thank you.
If I can do that?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Well, here we go.
You can just amend your motion.
Either way, the intent of the committee is clear.
We'll just make a new one. Chair Gilster, I move House Bill 3391A to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 3391A to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Mine is just that I'm sad this is going to Ways and Means and not directly to the floor.
Should go to the floor.
Right. Any further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
And Senator Dimbrough.
And Senator Dimbrough is excused. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3391. Let's wait until Senator Dimbrough gets here to suspend the rules to let people vote on things that we've already voted on.
Madam Chair, if I make a comment, I apologize for being boisterous, but it bothers me when we don't do things the right way the first time.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. We are going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2599A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2599A requires both public and private electric and gas utilities to report on the processes they have in place to mitigate termination of specified residential customer service for failure to pay during peak usage. By November 1st, 2015, it declares emergency is effective on passage. There is a -A3 amendment that removes the Department of Energy and requires each electrical cooperative, municipal utility, and people's utility district to report to their respective governing body instead. Or the original measure, the Angros measure, has them reporting to the Department of Energy, and the A3 amendment removes that requirement. Comes out of the House committee unanimously and off the House floor 41-19.
Thank you very much. John Bartholomew, Beth Vargas Duncan, and Rachel Klor, please.
Thanks. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, I'm Beth Vargas Duncan, Executive Director at Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association. We are a statewide association made up of 11 municipal electric utilities throughout the state. And the association was formed so that we have we promote affordable, reliable electricity to our cities. And we were formed, I'll just mention a little bit of the governing body because that's part of what's addressed in the amendment. We're governed by our city council, our utility board, comprised of community members who set the rates, regulatory policies, develop programs and services, and respond to specific customer needs, with, again, the primary focus being that we maintain our current authorities, enabling delivery of affordable, reliable, and safe electricity. So you already heard a description very ably of the bill and the amendment. I want to thank Representative Buckley for working with us to come up with language that everyone can agree upon. I don't know of anyone opposed to this legislation. And we do ask for support on the Dash 3 amendment. It does have the investor-owned, the private utilities reporting to their governing boards, and we ask that we are treated the same and report to our governing boards rather than the Department of Energy. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Rachel Klor on behalf of the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. OREECA represents the state's 18 not-for-profit electric cooperatives, which serve over 200,000 consumers in some of the most rural and remote parts of Oregon. OREECA would like to echo the Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities position on the Dash 3 amendments. Elected representatives that serve as a board of directors of our cooperatives are accountable to their membership. The local control and local decision-making are key reasons why electric co-ops are so effective and are able to keep electricity affordable and reliable. I also want to add that we're proud of our low-income assistance programs, and we'd be happy to provide any of that information on how we're able to help folks pay their bill. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Bartholomew. I'm the Government Relations Director for AARP Oregon, and I'm speaking on behalf of them and the Campaign for Oregon Seniors and People with Disabilities, which is a coalition of over 25 organizations working on senior and disability issues. And we just want to put in our support for this legislation and the Dash 3A amendments on this, in that this bill is all about making sure that people are not harmed when their utilities are shut off. And it's seniors are some of the most vulnerable people when it comes to either high heat or low temperatures, that the mortality rate skyrockets once you hit 75 under these conditions. And one of the biggest killers in America is actually heat waves. And if you can't run your air conditioner, can't even run a fan, that's very problematic. And the first step to making sure that this doesn't hurt Oregonians is really understanding what the utilities are doing now and making sure that there's consistency across the state. And I think this is a good bill for that purpose. So, thank you.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, this isn't asking you to compile any more data than you're already compiling. I mean, the utilities already have the programs, and they already collect the data. So it's not like we're creating something new here.
Senator, Chair Gelser, Senator Cruz, correct.
Okay.
It's helping to coalesce the information.
No, I understand that, but we're not creating a whole new reporting anything. It's just a collection of the data that's already being collected. So.
Thank you very much. You. Representative Buckley, your timing is exquisite.
Sometimes.
it's always a good time to see you, Senator Cruz.
It's been so long, Peter. You know, it's so long.
Peter, what do you have in your coffee cup?
It's just Chair Gelser, member of this committee, Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County Legislature. It is just water, Senator Olson. Thank you for your time consideration of this bill. The origin of the bill is a group in my district, the Jackson County Fuel Committee, that does tremendous work to make sure that they can help low-income seniors, low-income folks of any kind, a lot of the farm-working community, afford their utility bills. If they can't afford utility bills, they often help with firewood. They're just a great volunteer organization. A lot of the high school students do their community service hours through the organization, same with the Southern Oregon University students. And they had a concern with several of the folks that they had been working with. One gentleman who did pass away after his utilities were cut off. And they went right to the PUC, and they brought the problem forward. And many other states do have a statewide policy on shutting off utilities during extreme weather conditions. And that was our first thought was, well, Oregon should join with other states. We listened to the concerns from the utilities. The PUC staff has done a remarkable job of like surveying other states, surveying possibilities for Oregon. And the discussions around this bill kind of came down to, okay, what's the next step? If the PUC staff is doing this analysis and the PUC is willing to start to move in a good direction, if we can compile the information from all the utilities in the state and see where we are and see if there are steps we can make towards consistency so people can understand what is available to them in extreme weather situations, and groups like the one I mentioned would have the knowledge of how they can help people in their communities remain safe in case of a cutoff. And so the bill is amended down to basically that effort to move this forward by the coordination of the data, as Senator Cruz had mentioned.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions for the good co-chair? Seeing none, thank you for bringing this good bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else that would like to be heard on House Bill 2599? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2599A. Open up a work session on House Bill 2599A.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Dash A3 amendment dated 5-6-2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the A3 amendments dated 5-6-2015. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 2599A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2599A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Armanis Anderson. Oh, it's
Senator Dimbrow.
Senator Dimbrow is excused. And Senator Armanis Anderson, would you carry this one?
Sure.
Thank you very much. I will close the work session on House Bill 2599A. Senator Olson, would you be willing to suspend the rules so that our good friend can vote?
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules so that Senator Cruz can make a vote.
Senator Olson moves to suspend the rules so that Senator Cruz can vote on House Bill 2394, House Bill
3222,
and that's it. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I would vote yes on both of those bills if I was allowed to.
So please mark Senator Cruz as a yes on both. Senator Dimbrow is excused, and we are adjourned.